There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 908, October 18th. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say, Texas, here I come. Gunfight at the Cota Corral coming soon to your telly. Sunday. Back to Mr. Rogers, the pastor of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Danica says we needed an American driver in F1. Darn it. Perez takes the in-flight burrito to Dallas. And Nasser Hamid prepares for CODA. And just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. I hear that you're a little bit under the weather, but you will persevere for the people.
Yes, to borrow a phrase from my nephew when he was young, I have one headache, and I'm so glad I don't have two. But you know, sun is going to come up tomorrow. Hope it will be better. And are you ready for the United States Grand Prix in Austin, Texas? That's what we want to know, Mr. Rogers.
Absolutely. The Stetson Company is already working on Lewis Hamilton's hat, making sure it's fitted properly. And it looks good when he hits that podium. Yep, everybody's pumped up. We know that Christian Horner is believing that Mercedes has pulled another trick out of their hat, which I adore. But no, it's going to be very, very fascinating. Newey is back, and the bitterness is going to build up again. And when you eat a lot of beef and brisket and corn and beans, and you go over to the Busch Ranch, you're having a good time.
Yeah, speaking of ranch, I was listening to an interview with Mick Schumacher. You know, his family owns a big ranch in Texas. And he said he had invited Danny Ricciardo, Daniel Ricciardo, to come and visit him at the ranch. Because, you know, Daniel Ricciardo is a big fan of Americana, just like Lewis Hamilton. And he said he hasn't heard back from Danny Rick, so which is kind of surprising. And, you know, speaking of all these wonderful things, you know, like Danica Patrick, she will be on Sky TV broadcast of the U.S. Grand Prix. I mean, here's an expert on Formula One when you need one. And Daniel Ricciardo is going to drive Dale Earnhardt number 3 Wranglers. I think it's the Wrangler-sponsored Chevy doing some laps of Cota, so that will be interesting. And you already mentioned Sergio Perez was in Dallas. He was driving not the latest Red Bull, but an old Red Bull, which had a real engine that sounded like a real racing car. So I was listening to this guy, his video cast, Kim Illman. He was there, this Aussie mate. He does a good job with his YouTube channel. And he made a comment that he was expecting a lot more people, but you know, it's COVID time, so maybe the crowd was not as big as it would have been otherwise. But it's good to see all these things happening in the beautiful world of Formula One that we love so much.
So true, Nasser. And what kind of motor was it in the back of that old Red Bull?
That's a good question. It was the engine that gave them four successive championships, but then they couldn't come up with a competitive hybrid engine, And then they got nothing but heartache from Christian Horner and Mr. Dr. Marco. And, of course, the name is Renault.
Bravo. But at least you called it a proper motor.
Oh, absolutely. That's the sound, you know, and that we grew up with. That's what sucked us into motor racing. And speaking of your favorite driver, Lewis Carl Hamilton, as you know, he has been the big cowboy in Austin. Many wins, five. I mean, that guy wins a lot of races, man. And championship have been scored there for the Mercedes/McLaren driver. Bottas hanging him high in Istanbul has given new motivation to Toto and his wolf pack to get a second road kill for Star of Stuttgart in the Lone Star State. And here is the thing. If Max cannot even get into DRS range of Bottas in the rain, that should get the attention of Mr. Newey and Mr. Horner. And Mr. Horner recently was quoted as saying that, yes, Texas has been a stronghold for Lewis and Mercedes, and hopefully they will bounce back in high altitude tracks like in Mexico and Brazil. And then he said, we don't know how the last three races will pan out. So this is coming out, you know, going to be a fantastic finale to the season. Let's just hope they both finish all the races and the best man wins at the end of the season. On the other hand, Mr. Max has led more laps. This was very impressive, and I couldn't believe when I read this. He has led 469 laps this season, which is more than all other drivers combined, and that number is 465. So he has, I've always said, you know, this season, this is his championship to lose, but now Mercedes is showing some hidden muscles, and let's see, you know, if Lewis will be the man full of muscles, man from Brussels. Time will tell. But I don't think their respective teammates will be racing ahead of numero unos in normal circumstances. But title contenders should be on the lookout for the cheaters. The McLaren cars are on some tonic that have given them wings without sipping any Red Bull, and their drivers could take away valuable points if they get in the way. And Toto is right when he said a DNF would be fatal for the championship. But I do expect some argy-bargy between Lewis and Max one more time, and who knows, we may have a Suzuka situation in Yas Marina. Do you think that's a possibility?
It's a possibility, but we know it's unlikely. Everybody is, you know, PC has definitely taken over the paddock, and even though we saw some crazy stuff at Monza, and of course LCH mocking and taking out the Dutchman in Silverstone was brilliant. So, I don't know. We'll see. You know, everybody's on pins and needles now. You could imagine what these driver meetings are like. And the pre-race briefings are like for Max and Lewis. My goodness. And I hate to say it, but right now we can't have a DNF. So people will back down. There could be some indecision in some of these drivers to go or not to go because of what's happened in the past few races. So it's going to be interesting. I know one thing, the smart thing, and Toto is going to go by this rule, and that's going to keep them separated.
Yeah, but you know, when it comes down to the final race of the season and a championship is at stake, do you remember what Lewis was doing when Nico won his championship? Slowing down, trying to feed him to the wolves. Okay. I think if it goes down and we're whoever wins the race is going to be world champion, and they both have a competitive package that day. I just fear some nastiness, whether it's come from AlphaTauri or Sergio Perez or Bottas, or, you know, I'm not saying anybody will do something pre-planned, but you know, heat of the moment, it doesn't take much for things to go wrong. And I think it was in the Turkish Grand Prix when Max was trying to pass somebody. I think he touched the wheel, the front wing of somebody, and he even called out to his team to see if there was any damage. So when there is so much at stake, I think push and shove would be order of the day.
Well, I'm feeling so much more comfort knowing that Danica will be helping me process what's happening at COTA this weekend.
And now there is such a, you know, thing now that, oh, Colton Herta must be there, and Patricio Ward should also go there. But you know what, this writer, Marshall Pruitt, he wrote on Racer.com an open letter to Brian Herta. And as much as I love Formula One, I totally agree with him. He basically is saying to Colton Herta, don't do that. Because what's going to happen there, first he's in a car that will, he may never get into the top 10 with that team. Okay, so that's one problem. Second thing is, in Formula One, the way things are these days, if you're not beating the hell out of your teammate in the first three or four races, you know, memories are very short when it comes to hiring talent. If you're not performing right away, they're not interested. And he has already raced in Europe. You know, when Lando Norris won the Formula MSA, which is now British Formula 4, Colton Herta was there. He won some races, but the championship was totally dominated by Lando Norris, and this guy, Dan Ticktum, was also doing very well. Then what told me that Colton Herta is not Formula 1 material has nothing to do with his nationality or anything. He took part after the British Formula 4 in a series called, it has changed name, but these days it is called European Euro Open Formula, which is nothing but a fancy name for Spanish F3. And he did not even win that championship. And if you're not winning a national championship like a Spanish F3, then hard to believe that you can get into Formula 1 on performance only. And that's just for, not just for Colton, but for any driver. And I've seen quite a few drivers who have raced there. I mean, there's a kid here, Ed Jones. He's an English kid, but he grew up in Dubai. He was the king of karting there, and things didn't work out for him in Europe, so he came here and has done a pretty good job. So for Colton's sake, Herta's sake, I think it's a good advice that he should stay here, because he is an All-American kid, and if he cuts his long hair, he can be poster child for Roger Penske. And when you get into Penske team, success is just a season or two away. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Rogers?
I do, and I'll volunteer and cut that boy's hair.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Or maybe Danica can do that at COTA on the track for him.
She can, wearing her favorite bikini.
There you go.
Bravo.
Yes, and maybe she can get Milka Duno to assist her and then throw the towel on her face and get sweet revenge.
That's a completely different podcast. That's for adults only, Nasser.
Okay, and you're hosting that one too?
I do.
That's good. Okay, now let me ask you a question. I am interested in seeing Ferrari get a win this season. Any chance of that happening, you think?
Yes. Apparently, Sainz is the one, and we all thought Leclerc was the machismo, the numero uno. But I'm telling you, Sainz is really bonding with those people. He's cooking pasta. He's making his own marinara sauce from scratch. In the break room, this is respectable. He is giving them the kind of feedback that they need, and he's performing. It's very interesting, but both Ferraris are doing well. They get into the top five very often. I see an edge, and they did tweak their little frou-frou as they were complaining about Merck cheating every day and every night. And who could blame them? I think they're cheating, but nevertheless, Ferrari, I think, is more competitive than Alpine will ever be.
Well, you know, Carlito has done a very good job, because, you know, when he came into Ferrari, he was basically coming into Charles Leclerc's team, because this is the kid who basically showed Sebastian Vettel the door to leave Scuderia Ferrari. So that's a very impressive thing. And for him to come here, and he's not a driver who talks a lot or complains a lot. He's just dedicated to his craft, kind of like Sergio Perez. And he has done he has really impressed me a lot. And I really thought it would take him a year or two. And they always talk about Ferrari being a very political, you know, hot potato. But whatever goes on there, he has done a tremendous job. I mean, just to be on par with Charles Leclerc in his first season in a car that's not really top-notch, I think that's kudos to Carlito.
And don't forget, I'm sure his papa has a big thing to do with it.
Well, you know, his dad is a very classy gentleman. And, you know, the nice thing about his dad is every time I see him, I mean, I don't go to a lot of Formula One races, but every time I see him, he at least has the decency to stop and have a chat with me for a few minutes, always. And that's very nice and kind of him. And I think the son has the same class. You know, we over the years, we've interviewed Carlito a few times. He was always very nice and polite. I remember meeting him first time when he was in Formula BMW. He was very, very young in those days. And good to see him driving for the biggest name in the world of motor racing. Lando Norris, do you think he will get a win this season? I would love that.
He's running out of time. The biggest problem is the max LCH factor. That's going to be a big part of every race from now on, especially as close as it is. And we're all watching engines and grid penalties. And Lando and McLaren will be left sort of behind. And they got a lot of luck. Some of that, I'm telling you, Ricciardo's win at Monza was very lucky, but it was W is a W. Let's just hold off. I think McLaren is fine, but the show has shifted now. They'll be in the thick of it, fighting with Ferrari for the constructors, but right now we're going back to Max and LCH and nothing else.
And speaking of another podcast, remember we used to take a lot of pride that F1 Weekly has outlasted the Renault F1 team podcast because they were asked to ship it from the, you know, they were doing the show at the Formula One events. It's a good thing they're not quitters. They have come back now with another, it's not a weekly podcast, but this is now under the Alpine F1 team banner and it's called Prost in the Paddock. Okay, and I listened to a little bit of it. They're going to do it like basically give process view on racing, past, present, and future. And one of the podcasts I listened to, he was saying that this is what he said, and I quote, "These modern cars are not for us. You need to live with your time, with your generation, and you can't have both. It's almost impossible." And of course, so and if anybody wants to hear some Francais words of wisdom, please check out the Alpine F1 Team podcast. I'm sure you will do, Mr. Rogers.
Already been doing it. Love them. We hug in the morning and in the evening.
That's good. And I'm looking forward to the 2022 F1 calendar. You probably saw the news. They have announced there may be some tweaks here. 23 races opening around in Bahrain on March 20th. And exactly 8 months later, final race will be in Abu Dhabi on November 20th. Chinese Grand Prix, chop chop from the calendar, replaced by Imola, where you can see more fans than empty seats. So that's a good thing. Now, I say best part of waking up in 2022, apart from Folgers in your cup, will be two Formula One races in the good old United States of America. Baby, Miami Beach Rumba on May 8th and the Texas Foxtrot on October 23rd. And Mr. Rogers, if stars and bars and dollars and cents align, I look forward to attending both these U.S. Grand Prix races, which will be fantastic. Now, the French Grand Prix has survived the guillotine, but there is no Grand Prix in Germany. You know, recently Sebastian Vettel spoke about Formula One needs to have some morals, and, you know, I've not read the whole thing, but I find it absolutely mind-blowing. We have a race in Azerbaijan, Saudi Arabia, and who knows where. We don't have a race in the land that produced, listen to this, the 14.2 Nürburgring. Names like Bernd Rosemeyer, Porsche, Mercedes, Audi, Auto Union, BMW, Michael Schumacher, Sebastian Vettel. And that's very, very sad. It's a shame, actually. What say you?
It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. And I am really going to fly out to Germany and I'm going to start rooting for Vettel for president. This guy, he has the right attitude. He's right. Why in the world are we in Saudi Arabia? Now, don't get me wrong. I have said this before. When they donate to F1 Weekly, I'll be their biggest fan like everybody else is. But Formula One shouldn't be in Saudi Arabia. I mean, I think women just got to drive last year.
Yeah, but you know, this thing becomes a political hot potato. And if you start pointing fingers like this, then, you know, you have to listen to the other side also. I mean, you know, I would like to see, I mean, I love this globalization and international racing, but I would like to see, before a race in Saudi Arabia or Bahrain, you know, I'll tell you, I've been to the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix a couple of times. You really cannot find a local there, okay? I mean, all the girls working there were European girls or American girls, and again, I don't have a problem with that, but you just don't see any locals there, okay? So I would like to see a race first in Argentina, land of Fangio and Reutemann. I would like to see it at Kyalami, fantastic track. Of course, Germany. And, you know, I think Scandinavian countries, they deserve a race too. They can do a street race somewhere in Sweden. I mean, they have a few tracks there anyway. I mean, there used to be a Grand Prix there. So they should. I would love to have... Can you imagine, you were talking about New Zealand the other day. They have such beautiful tracks there, or even a street race in Christchurch or Auckland, just a beautiful place. That'll be fantastic. But, you know, Lewis was right. Cash is king. Okay, sir, on the positive side, popular venues like Montreal, Singapore, and Melbourne are all on the schedule, and let's hope they stay away and this silly virus goes away. Sooner the better. And Mr. Roger, here is Red Lobster's catch of the day. If I get the Nancy Sinatra CD, These Boots Are Made for Walking, from my employer, which I am totally expecting sometime next month, and then, my last working day will be December 31st. If that happens, I will be able to attend for the first time in my life the opening race of the Formula One season. And of course, if I'm not working, I will have a lot of time. And I'm looking at some other travel opportunities and possibilities also. And I am really hoping that Michael Andretti will buy Sauber team. If that happens, I will be at Monza. I'm going to be there at Monza, hopefully, regardless of whatever. Because, sir, next year I will be celebrating the 40th anniversary of my first Grand Prix there at Parco Monza in 1982, which was Mario Andretti's final pole position and podium finish. The reason I want Michael to buy Sauber, if he does that, then I'm pretty sure Mario will be there, and how wonderful it will be to meet the 1978 world champion and have a brief chat with him at the place where he went as a kid and saw Alberto Ascari race. So these are called dreams. Dream the impossible dream, and we'll see what time and destiny brings. What say you?
Well, not only that, Nasser, but to be at the place where Fernando and Ferrari had a 1-2 in 2010 with Felipe Massa finishing a wonderful number two. Yes, indeed. Monza. So great to the greats. You know what I mean, Nasser?
Oh, absolutely. When you talk about Nando, the thing I remember most about him was his teammate complaining about somebody blocking him. Do you mind qualifying? Remember that?
That was the best. I mean, he was like 4 miles away, and he was just a silhouette. But
he was at Spa, and he was complaining that he blocked me. Who was he complaining about, Massa?
He was complaining about El Machismo.
Was it? I thought it was about somebody else.
No, I think it was Massa.
Well, he was then teammate of Machismo, so he could not be...
You can. No, I can. See, now I'm getting all fuzzy. Let me take more meds. I'll be fine.
Yeah, okay. Well, drugs saved my life also. Okay, sir, shall we take a little break here?
Indeed. I feel a little parched, and it's time for some tea. So, we'll be right back after this brief archival interview.
Nass introduces gentlemen.
Yes, sir, Naren Karthikeyan. He is from the South Indian city of Chennai, previously known as Madras, and now a major IT and racing hub of Indian motorsports. Narain's racing education started at the age of 16. He was on the Clark Rogers program. He went to France to attend the famous Winfield Racing School. In 1994, he won the Formula Ford Winter Series in UK. 1996, he was Formula Asia champion. In 1999, he gave Trevor Carlin's team their first Formula 3 victory. In 2005, he became the first and so far the only Indian driver to ever race in F1, which is a very impressive feat, I must say. In 2006, he was test driver at Williams. Lately, he has been very competitive in the A1GP series and has scored 2 wins for them. My thanks to Narain for his time at Le Mans, and F1 Weekly would like to wish him for the success in his career. And I hope our listeners enjoy this conversation. Thank you.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Le Mans with Narain Karthikeyan from India. Narain, thank you for your time. How are you today, sir?
Yeah, it's been a baptism of fire, Le Mans, for a rookie. It's pretty daunting, but I'm up for the challenge. Obviously, the R10 is a successful car. Maybe not the quickest on the circuit, but has a lot of good reliability. So, I mean, really looking forward to driving the Audi R10 for the 24 hours, and we will be, keenly watched from India. We have a lot of support, and I'm very happy to be the first Indian to be driving here. And this is a great opportunity, and I'll try and do the best I can.
What is the biggest adjustment you are facing or challenge in adjusting, because most of your background is open wheel racing?
Yeah, single seater has been my key racing for a long time, but this is my second race in this category. But nothing prepares you for the Le Mans unless you do it, and the next time you do it, you'll be more experienced, and that could be, the first year is always going to be the most difficult one.
And how did this deal come about? Did Dr. Colin Collis call you, or you approach them? Can you give us a little background, please?
Well, I've known Dr. Collis for a long time in my Formula 1 days and Formula 3 days. So, obviously, we kept in touch. And when the opportunity came up, he gave me a call. And, nobody would want to resist the offer to drive the R10. So I was here.
Now, you talk about support in India. There's a Formula 1 race coming up there. How big is the interest in motor racing among general public? I mean, will we see an average Indian more interested in Formula 1 than cricket in the next few years?
Well, that's a long, long shot. But what I can tell you is there's a lot of interest in Formula 1 and motor racing, whole A1GP is also, because we are a front-running team, the A1 Team India. So there's a lot of following, and there's a lot of support for me as well. It's never be as popular as cricket, because cricket is, they say, it's a religion in India. Formula One and other forms of motorsport are getting decent exposure, and I think in the near future we'll have a lot more Indian drivers coming into the international racing scene.
You mentioned A1GP. The car is very nice looking, light blue color. It reminds me of the old Matra car. And you had your first win in Shanghai, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
How big was that for Indian motorsports and for you personally?
Yeah, the win in China gave us a huge boost. That was end of 2007. And then we again won in England in Brands Hatch in 2008. So it was fabulous, and then the economic downturn, we kind of struggled this year with the finances of the team and everything, but we're trying to restructure it and put it together, and the new A1GP Ferrari car is awesome to drive, and we are hopefully going to get a strong team put together for the forthcoming season.
When you first moved from India to England, I believe you were with Carlin Motor Racing Team. What was the? Were you surprised at the difference in? Obviously, the depth of competition was greater, but was there a big difference in the competitiveness of racing drivers from what you were used to in India and Southeast Asia?
Sure, I was racing in England before I raced in Asia, so I knew what to expect. But my big break was, I think, the confidence and everything came when I won in Formula 3 in England. All the great drivers, Adam Senna, so many of them have graduated through the British Formula 3 Championship. And I went won some races there, competing with Sato, Jenson Button, and beating them in occasions. I think that gave me the confidence to go to the next level. And I definitely thought I had a crack at Formula 1. And then the dream came true in 2005.
Now, if I remember, there was quite a bit of exchange of words between your camp and the team. There was some tension. Looks like they were trying to get rid of you or whatever it was. What happened there, if you could talk a little bit about there, please?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just some speculation, and I think it got all out of proportion. But we, as I told you, we had a great relationship with the team, and that's all I can say.
Okay. Now, you had a huge crash. I was watching this race live in China. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's a long time ago, but I just got it wrong, and the tires were not up to temperature, and I had a crash. So it wasn't nothing too just dramatic from the outside, but not from the inside.
Okay, another reference to in the media. Media may say something that you may not say. There were also some reports that you don't want to drive for Vijay Mallya's team because it's a back-of-the-bus operation. Any truth to that report?
No, I mean, I said what I have to say because, you know, they didn't want me. And it wasn't that I was going and asking for a drive anyways. Mm-hmm. So he kept referring to that, you know, Karun and I are not good enough or whatever. So, again, it got out of proportion in the media because you say something and it's not portrayed in that manner, and it's kind of speculated. So it when it comes up, it feels really dramatic, but it's not that bad, to be honest.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and that's why I'm asking you. Okay, now, what is the game plan for next season? If you have some agenda going on right now, if you could talk about it, please.
Well, my management is trying to do something, we keep everything open. NASCAR is a possibility as well, so...
You're making history everywhere, man.
Yeah, so this is the Formula One races have gone there and kind of doing decent, so this is something that my management is working on.
You know, I would love to see you at Indy someday because that will really make a huge, huge statement. What do you think?
For sure. I mean, it's one of the, you know, one race, like, it's like the Le Mans. It's such a big, history behind it, and, you know, love to do it. As a racing driver, when you grow up as a kid, you watch the Le Mans, the Monaco, and the Indy 500, so, you know, why not?
Okay. Coming from India, South Asia, there's a lot of growing interest in motor racing right now, and I'm sure in due course they will catch up with other countries. What is the better advice you can give to youngsters in that part of the world?
I mean, it's pretty difficult to take this up as a career option, but, when I started 15 years ago, there was no chance, it looked like, but I proved them, you know, proved we could make it to the top and be competitive and everything, so where there's a will, there's a way.
Finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly? We have listeners everywhere, including your country.
Yeah, I think, what can I say? I think you have to focus on something and go after it till you get it. That was my motto, and I've living my dream now, and that's what I would like to say for everyone.
One last question: is Dr. Kaul is also a good dentist?
I believe so. Yes,
he's never pulled your tooth.
On my teammate, yes, but not me. But he's quite a good dentist, apparently.
Okay. Thank you very much. Nice meeting you. All the best.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And we go to Carlos Sainz Jr. and Sr.'s home country, Viva España, for the round of World Rally Championship. Winner for Hyundai was Thierry Neuville from Belgium. Man from Wales, Elvin Evans was second. He is in a Toyota. And second Hyundai of Daniel Sordo, who is a local hombre, he was third. And of course, you know, we had no Formula One, no IndyCar. And there was some ruckus in DTM season finale 2 weeks ago when this guy from, who's a very talented kid, Calvin van der Linde, he was fighting for the championship. And he basically did a serious argy-bargy and caused the retirement of the guy who was fighting also for the championship, Red Bull Junior, Mr. Liam Lawson from New Zealand. So Dr. Marco is not too happy. And, of course, there was no MotoGP. So, sir, in the absence of all these things, we want to bring some goodie bag. We haven't done a goodie bag in a while. So we have a goodie bag called Fast and Final. And I was walking, and I was thinking of what can we do. And I said, the season is most likely going to the season final race. So why not look at some major final race championship deciders? So if I have your express written consent, I shall proceed just like Al Michaels on Monday Night Football.
Al Michaels is now on Sunday Night Football, Nasser, so you really need to pick up the pace on the NFL. And by the way, John Gruden is not in the NFL anymore as well. So, hang on. Pedro just texted me. You may continue.
Well, the reason I said Monday Night Football, that's my memory of Al Michaels when I used to watch with my friends Monday Night Football, and that's stuck with me. Anyway, so we're going to look at a lot of championships over the decades have been decided on in the final race. So here is just a look at some of them. 1959, the final race of the 1959 season was the first ever Formula One Grand Prix in the United States. Less than 2 hours from where I am today, which is Tampa, and that place was Sebring, FLA. Three drivers had the opportunity to become world champion. Jack Brabham, Stirling Moss, and the English dentist Tony Brooks. Moss was leading when he retired after 5 laps, handing the lead to Jack with his Cooper teammate Bruce McLaren in second. On the final lap, Black Jack ran out of fuel but pushed his car to the finish line to finish fourth and claimed the first of his 3 championships. This made Bruce, at that time, the youngest Grand Prix winner, and that record stood till 2003 when El Machismo won in Magyar Republic on the expanding tires, which is another beauty. Okay, sir, 1962. This was the season that gave Graham Hill his first championship in a BRM. The championship went to the final round in East London, South Africa. Hill's championship challenger was great Jim Clark. He was leading the race from pole position, and he had to win the race to become world champion. But on lap 62 of 82, he dropped out after an oil leak. Now remember, he was driving for Lotus, not the finest in reliability. Hill's teammate was Richie Ginther, the only American in the race, and he finished 7th. 1964, the season started in May with the Monaco Grand Prix and finished with the Mexican Grand Prix in October. The championship went to the wire between 3 British legends, Jim Clark, Graham Hill, and motorcycle champion John Surtees. Clark started from his customary position on the grid, pole position, surprise, surprise. On lap 31, argy-bargy between Graham Hill and Ferrari's Lorenzo Bandini spun both drivers, and there is still a lot of talk that this was done purposely, and who knows what the truth is. Clark was on his winning way to winning the race and his second title, then history repeated itself. Oil leak seized the engine on the final lap. Talk about going to the final race to win the championship. This put the Ferrari drivers second and third with Bandini ahead of Surtees. Then came the Smedley moment, long before Smedley was born, and Surtees sailed by the Italian driver to become the first and so far the only man to become world champion on 2 and 4 wheels. And sir, speaking of British racing legends, you know, I don't remember the year exactly, but sometime in the early 60s, all races were won by British drivers. And if you look at the future of British drivers in Formula One, well, we got Lewis Hamilton for at least another 2 years. His teammate will be George Russell. And then Lando Norris is doing very well. So things are looking very good for Her Majesty's reign to continue at the top of the Grand Prix world. Okay, sir. Now, the 1964 Mexican Grand Prix, which we were just talking about, was won by Dan Gurney in a Brabham. 1974, a decade after John Surtees gave Ferrari World Championship, Swiss driver Clay Regazzoni was hoping to give the Italian team their first driver's championship since 1964. The 1974 season finale was in upstate New York at the Watkins Glen Circuit. His challenger was 1972 champion Emerson Fittipaldi. He was 1 point ahead of Clay going into the season finale. A bad handling car forced Regga into the pits, which basically ended his hopes of celebrating first ever Swiss fondue in F1. Emo said later after the race that once he knew that Clay was not a factor, he just cruised to fourth place finish to take his second championship in 3 years. And I remember very well at that time, Stirling Moss was very critical of Emo that he cruised to take the title, saying there is no way to win a championship. That race was a double the pleasure for Brabham, as Carlos Reutemann from Argentina won the race, and his Brazilian teammate Carlos Pache was second. Tragedy struck at Watkins Glen for the second year in a row, when on lap 10, young Austrian driver Helmut Koenig crashed through the barrier and was decapitated. Okay, sir, now we come to 1976. Thanks to Ron Howard, people who don't even follow Formula One know about this rush for the championship till the final race of the season in heavy rain at Mount Fuji Circuit. While Hunt the Shunt took the championship, the race was won by Mario Andretti and his Lotus, and this was his first Grand Prix win since his maiden victory in the 1971 South African Grand Prix on his Ferrari debut. So very impressive there. 1984, losing the championship by a point is bad enough. Just ask LCH and Machismo. But losing the championship by half a point is total stinko. Just ask Le Professor, beaten by that margin by his McLaren teammate Niki Lauda. If only Jackie Ickx had not red flagged the 1984 Monaco Grand Prix and allowed Ayrton Senna to win the race in his Tolman Turbo. Karma can be a nasty ditch. So sad. Do you have more time, sir?
Plenty of time, sir.
Okay. You know, when Mr. Bottas won the Turkish Grand Prix, he became the 35th driver to score 10 wins or more. And of course, in his situation, it was tricky condition and from pole position. Very impressive. Okay. Now, there are four other drivers who have 10 wins. James Hunt, Jody Scheckter, Ronnie Peterson, Gerhard Berger. These two never claimed a title, so which is very sad. You know, Ronnie Peterson, he was my first hero in 73. He was Emerson Fittipaldi's teammate, and he rattled the cage of Emo and basically won a lot of races and prevented Fittipaldi from winning the championship. Okay, sir, so what else we have? Now, Max, unfortunately, has the record of most wins, which is 17, without winning the championship. And the other drivers who have won 10 or more races and do not have a title include names like Moss, DC, Carlos Reutemann, Felipe Baby, and Rubinho. And so let's see what else we have here. Any comments on all these names that we just mentioned here, sir?
Well, these are great names in Formula One. They've all contributed so much to our great memories. It's always good to hear those names bubbling up to the top again. You know what I'm saying? The forgotten people. Keep up the good work, Nasser.
Yeah, you know, and as far as Carlos Reutemann is concerned, man, when he won the 1978 British Grand Prix at Brands Hatch in that beautiful Ferrari 312 T3, passing Lauda in the Brabham Alfa Romeo in the closing stages, that was one of the happiest days of my life. I still remember that race so very well. Okay, Mr. Rogers, now we come to famous last words. Today they come from Checo Sergio Perez. It will sound very familiar, and all I can say is Mr. Gasly and Mr. Albon, please pick up the white courtesy phone wherever you are. And this is what Checo said, and I quote, "Verstappen has no obvious weaknesses. It's hard being his teammate," end of quote. And you know, Mr. Rogers, the man of music you are, Mr. Marvin Gaye used to sing, "Can I get a witness?" We do have a witness from the 2007 season who can testify. We just can't get enough of Machismo. So we do have a witness from the 2007 season who can testify in front of a Grand Prix jury how criminally fast a rookie can be. Now, can you imagine being a teammate to Senna, Schumacher, Prost, or Jim Clark when they were in their prime? You basically have no chance And if you are lucky or stupid enough to be their teammate, then your dishes are done before you can finish your bangers and mash. What say you?
Huh. Well, we also call that finito. Yep. But Fernando es un machismo, and he's still with us today. He does it so fantastic, and now he's become the philosopher of the paddock. I'm telling you, I can't get enough of my Kimua cap and gown.
Yeah, and I forgot 2007 season for you is Delito.
Exactly-o.
Yes, yes, sir, yes, sir. And he has said that Lewis is going to have a hard time next year with the charge, and you should know. And Max has said the same thing. And that is really is going to be fantastic next season, whether they have a competitive car or not. George Russell, if Lewis dominates this guy in the first four or five races, some of the hype that we have will start to evaporate. But we don't know how it will go, so we'll have to have the races run and see how it goes. But we do love cage rattling, whether it's coming from Lewis Hamilton or being directed at him.
And it will be directed at him. I hate to say it, but next year, Lewis Hamilton will not win a single Grand Prix.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me, Mr. Rogers. This guy will find a way to win a race, just like Max will.
I remember when he was at McLaren and things were going down. Tears in my sausage and my bangers.
He has won a race every year he has been in Formula One. You know that, right?
I do.
Yeah. If he does not have a competitive a car, then he will win a race in the rain. And that it's as simple as that.
May the cucumber be with him.
Yes. And the thing is, next year, it's a reset for everybody. So there's no guarantee that Mercedes will have this edge. But I think next year he will have quite a few slings and arrows coming towards him from his own teammate, from Max, no question about it. If Ferrari or McLaren can get something going, then they have drivers who can stick it to him too. And as we all know, he's not going to lay down and play dead for anybody. And like he said, he is there for his people. So maybe that's his motivation. But whatever it is, we want the very best duking out at the very front. And that will be very, very exciting. And sir, now we have some musical mondial to go with today's famous last words. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy. Take it away, Bonnie.
Good night.
It's a heartache, nothing but a heartache. Hits you when it's too late, hits you when you're done.